Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Guys, we're experiencing some technical difficulties. That was Next from yesterday. We're talking about Next today. Want to catch you guys up to speed. Except for the Rockies, it often costs triple digits to go to a major pro sports game in Denver. Right now, they're the budget ticket option, but perhaps not for long. Members of Denver City Council are proposing a ballot measure that would add taxes from 5 to 15% onto your tickets to pay for safer streets and transit. Our Spencer Soiter explains.
Summer just started and the Rockies are already 20 games out of first place. But it's been a particularly fun year to watch Denver's pro teams up close.
This is a luxury.
Denver City Councilwoman Flora Alvidres has another word for it.
You know, many of my constituents could never afford to go to a game that costs $250.
Alvidres and Councilwoman Sarah Parity are proposing a tax on large venue tickets to generate $30 million a year for the city's underfunded Safe Routes to School program, which is supposed to make infrastructure improvements that make it safer for kids to walk and bike to their schools.
These are plans that the city has had for over a decade that haven't gotten enough funding to do things like crosswalks at school, fund crossing guards.
The seat tax would be applied to tickets at private venues with more than 1,000 seats, so concert venues too, places like Mission Ballroom and Fillmore Auditorium. The current proposal, which Alvidres says she's open to adjusting, would not apply to resale tickets and would be broken up into three tiers. Tickets under $100 would come with a 5% tax, $100 to $250, 10%, and tickets over $250 would come with a 15% tax.
It is a large percent. That idea came from, if someone can afford these things, what's an extra $50 if they're spending hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars?
The proposal would first need approval from the rest of the city council, then the mayor, and then voters in November. Alvidres says she didn't share the plans with the teams ahead of time.
I believe the teams probably hate this.
She met with the Broncos yesterday.
They felt kind of targeted.
The Broncos did not respond to our request for comment. Neither did the Rockies, Denver Summit FC, or the Nuggets and Avs. But the mayor did. In a statement, Denver Mayor Mike Johnston's office told 9 News it does not support the current version, saying in part, quote, "We're concerned this will make it more difficult for music lovers, sports fans, and families to enjoy one of Denver's great drivers of revenue and joy," but added it would work with the council on improvements.
Can add the Nuggets and the Avs to the list of groups that don't like this. Just heard back from them that they are opposed to this as well. So even if the mayor vetoed this, it could still reach voters. If 9 of the 13 council members were on board, there could be a veto override. And I feel like you're all about to ask us about concerts at Red Rocks. No tax there. That's a city-owned venue, and those are exempt in this proposal, Angeline.
So Red Rocks is spared, but the city wouldn't be doing this, Spencer, unless they thought that they could generate some money, and significantly some money, right, from this?
Yeah, they think hopefully at least $30 million, although they don't have the numbers yet that they need from the Department of Finance to actually go through with this. They would need the mayor's office to play ball with that. We'll see if the council members are able to get those figures that they're looking for and obviously generate the money that they think that the city budget doesn't have at the moment.
All right, still some things to work through at least. Yeah, thanks so much, Spencer. Hundreds of thousands of Haitians and Syrians are now in immigration limbo after the Supreme Court sided with President Trump that he could remove their legal protections and deport them. Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, gives immigrants from countries facing disaster, violence, or political instability the chance to live and work in the United States. With those protections now likely disappearing, roughly 350,000 Haitians will likely be deportable with few legal options to remain and work in the U.S., and they'll return to a country with high crime rates and ongoing gang violence. The lead counsel who argued in front of the Supreme Court said this decision would directly result in thousands of innocent people dying violent, needless deaths. The nonprofit African Community Center is currently working with hundreds of Haitian clients in the Colorado area.
We've been really trying to brainstorm other avenues of immigration relief for Haitians. Unfortunately, there really are not many options, which is why this decision was such a blow to this community in particular.
Through our reporting and calls today, we've been told from an immigration attorney here in town that at least one Haitian held at the ICE detention facility is already at risk of immediate deportation following the Supreme Court decision. And in the next week or so, we're still anticipating some landmark decisions from the Supreme Court on some of the biggest cases that are still on the table. We're awaiting opinions on birthright citizenship, and the court is also weighing whether states can ban transgender athletes from girls' sports teams. With the court's summer recess fast approaching, we're expecting these decisions in a matter of days. About 250,000 unaffiliated voters have already returned their ballots for Tuesday's primary. Unaffiliates get to choose to vote in either the Democratic or Republican primary. Our Marshall Zellinger found out there are already more than 1,000 that will not have their votes counted because they turned in both ballots.
Next, the unaffiliated ballot packet will have this insert in it. It says vote and return only one ballot.
Voting in Tuesday's primary comes with more instructions for 2 million unaffiliated voters. When you get your ballots for both the Republican and Democratic primaries, vote and return only one ballot, not both.
Obviously, the vast majority of people don't send both back in. But, you know, it's our job to make sure that communication's clear, so we did put that insert back in.
Democratic Adams County Clerk Josh Ziegelbaum had the county pay the $17,000 to put these half-page inserts back into unaffiliated voter packets after seeing a rise in the number of unaffiliateds returning both ballots.
Initially, we had included an insert with the ballots to communicate to voters to only return one. The numbers were indicating that voters had that behavior down, and we discontinued using that insert, and we saw a small jump.
In 2018, Adams County saw 79 unaffiliated voters return two ballots. In 2024, it was almost 1,600. 8% of all unaffiliated voters returned both. So far this year, about 400.
We put the inserts back in because we did see that number start to creep up. And just to be safe, we want to make sure that, you know, the information is out there.
It's in every county's longer ballot instructions. Arapahoe County has a little picture graphic. In 2018, 805 unaffiliated voters returned both in Arapahoe County. In 2024, 1,500. So far this year, 256. And Denver County's voter instructions includes this picture of a torn ballot with the instruction, destroy the unvoted ballot.
If both ballots are voted, neither can be counted.
For Next, I'm Marshall Zellinger.
Of the counties we reached out to, Jefferson County had the best progress in getting voters to only return one. Boulder County had only seen a slight increase over the years. The counties where voters seemed to need the most reminders were El Paso and Adams County. A federal judge blocked some key components of President Trump's restrictions on mail voting today. The court ruled states have the right to conduct their own elections and that President Trump's attempts to intervene are unconstitutional. The president's executive order from March directed federal agencies to create a state citizenship list of eligible voters. The U.S. Postal Service would only be allowed to mail ballots to voters on that list. Vote by mail has been a frequent target of President Trump, who claims that there is widespread fraud in the system. 24 states sued to block those changes from going into effect. A White House spokesperson says that they plan to appeal. This is now the second setback this week for President Trump's efforts to expand his power over elections. Yesterday, another federal court blocked an executive order requiring people to show proof of citizenship when registering to vote. The former Pueblo County coroner and his brother have been arrested on dozens of felony charges more than a year after bodies were found stashed in a hidden room at their funeral home. Former Pueblo County coroner Brian Cotter and his brother Chris both face 125 felony counts of abuse of a corpse. State regulators found the remains of 24 bodies during a surprise inspection at Davis Mortuary last August. Investigators say the bodies had been improperly stored for more than a decade, and they've only been able to identify 19 of them so far. Today, investigators also announced they found additional remains stored there and believe there are at least 125 victims. This is the first major case to result from a new state law expanding state inspection authority over funeral homes. Inspections are now mandatory every year, and regulators have authority to conduct surprise visits if they suspect wrongdoing.
The evidence uncovered during this investigation reveals a complete disregard for the dignity of the deceased and a profound betrayal of the trust placed in Davis Mortuary by families in our community. This case has demonstrated that the state's new inspection authority is a vital tool for compliance and public safety.
The The Colorado Bureau of Investigation says coroners will continue to work to identify the remaining 9 bodies that were found at the mortuary. Severe storms and flash flooding hit the foothills last night. We're checking in on the damage left behind.
I always say it's a little slice of heaven because it's a magical place, you know.
And a small town gathering place is up for sale, so locals are rallying to buy it themselves. That's next. Cleanup is underway in the foothills tonight after last night's storms caused flash flooding across the area. Bear Creek was especially problematic. Its banks burst and caused flooding in Evergreen and Kittredge. Kittredge got around 3 inches of rain last night. That's about a fifth of their annual rainfall. The Jeffco Sheriff's Office said they conducted welfare checks last night. No injuries, thankfully, have been reported so far, but there's plenty of damage to local homes, businesses, and roads. Gosh, so Corey, I was talking with Chris Bianchi earlier this week. Hail chances. Hail came last night for a lot of us. I am just like struggling to keep my plants alive in my vegetable garden. When will it end?
Yeah, it's not easy to be a plant around here for sure. We have another wave of storms coming right now. So tonight it could get very interesting across Front Range. A little bit slower tomorrow, but then the weekend we're clear of this. The pattern flips. But look at this line of storms extending from the western slope all the way up into Cheyenne, Wyoming right now. Look at this. Cheyenne, Wyoming just got knocked out by 60 to 70 mile per hour winds and 1 inch hail, and that is headed towards the Front Range here. It looks like the bulk of this is going to miss the metro Front Range, but I'd be concerned about the back end of this re-intensifying as it makes its way to Wellington, Fort Collins, Greeley. It could be in Fort Collins by next 20 to 30 minutes. That puts the timing here in Denver by about 8 o'clock. So the timeline that we've been working on here fits in. So 7 to 11, we'll say 8 o'clock here in Denver. That storm front could be here. Watch for 1 inch hail, damaging winds, and flash flooding potentially as that line of storms makes it to Denver. Tomorrow there will be a few more storms, but they should be scaled down a little bit. So I'm a little bit less concerned about those impacts. And then the pattern flips, and we're right back into hot conditions with fire weather. Middle 90s across the weekend, and then it stays in the 90s with fire weather straight through the rest of the week.
Our next question tonight comes from a viewer named Randall, who wants to know what language referees use to speak to players during the World Cup. There are teams representing 48 countries. How are they all communicating?
Randall, great question. Dozens of languages are spoken by players at the World Cup, but the refs are all required to speak English. Referees use short phrases like play on, foul, or advantage to communicate with players. They also use universally understood whistle blows, hand signals, and penalty cards. Most of the World Cup referees speak more than one language, though, including English, French, German, and Spanish. Send us your next question. Anything about Colorado that you've wondered about, we welcome written and video questions. We'll post them. Email them, though, to us at next@9news.com or text next at 303-871-1491.
It is kind of like one big family up a canyon surrounded by mountains.
She calls it one big family. This is their living room. Why Jamestown residents are trying to buy their favorite spot. Next. If you've been to the mountains, you know so many of the alpine towns have their own often hidden gems. For the people who live there, those businesses can really be the heart of the town. Our Mike Grady went to Jamestown to see how the folks in Boulder County are trying to preserve their own gem.
Some places are essential to their community.
Hey everybody, welcome to Open Mic Night here at the Jamestown Mercantile.
John Luttrell hosts this session in the mountains of Boulder County.
Jamestown is the town I've been looking for all my life. You know, it's just feels like home, and everybody treats you like, you know, they've known you forever.
Jamestown is a slice of perfection.
Misa and Mikhail also call Jamestown home.
Yeah, there's space for people to be who they are and for that to be a little off-center.
Maple Sundae.
I would describe Jamestown as a tight-knit community full of self-reliant people.
Mayor Michael Box will tell you even a town of 250 people has plenty of needs. Like a social hub.
And that's the Merc, the Jamestown Mercantile Cafe.
Do you think that's just like TikTok ruining the world, maybe?
I think it is.
Rainbow Schultz runs the Merc.
For people who haven't been here, I tell them that it's like our community's living room.
A historical landmark as well, besides being a great, you know, eatery and music spot.
This is a hidden gem of Boulder County. But we have to talk about it now, because we have to talk about how valuable it is.
A value that's becoming more evident.
Well, the owner of the property has decided to sell it, and we just decided as a community that whatever potential buyer, whatever they might want to do with the place, is just too great a risk to wait and find out. So we formed a nonprofit, and as a community, we're sort of spearheading this grassroots effort to raise $1.5 million to buy it from him. What's gone wrong?
They have until next May to raise the money before the sale opens up to the public.
If you want something done, it's on us.
In rural Colorado, places like this can be priceless.
We had big floods in 2013. After those floods, this was a major hub for people to come and gather and share resources and communicate.
The community is rallying around its gathering spot to make sure it stays open for good.
I always say it's a little slice of heaven.
The Merc will be saved. Viva la Merc.
It's worth whatever it takes right now to know that something like this is safe.
For next.
It's a magical place.
I'm Mike Grady.
Good luck. We'll watch it. We're back with your feedback next. Feedback tonight. A lot of you are really chatty about this tax on events and sporting events as well. Some of you wrote in, when are we going to stop taxing everything? Another one from Ken, maybe the city should actually prioritize funding. Want to give you actually a quick update here. We've heard back from every major pro sports team in town. The Broncos, the Nuggets, Avs, Rockies, the Summit, issuing a joint statement coming out against this seat tax proposal, believing that the measure is being advanced too quickly. We'll continue to cover this one. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.